Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for joining into Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that is solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks, and we have a great show today with a wonderful guest who is an expert on the topic of today's show. So we all know that times change, sometimes much faster than we want or even that we can understand. In the multifamily world, these changes can be called major disruptive shifts that stand to reshape the needs and wants of tomorrow's renters. The question is, can the multifamily industry adapt its approach to designing, developing, and operating apartment communities fast enough to stay relevant? With this in mind, our topic today is 8 Game Changers for Multifamily. Joining me today on the Multifamily Matters Hotline is Rick Hoey, Vice President of Industry Technology Initiatives with the National Multifamily Housing Council. Thanks for joining in with us, Rick.
Great. Thanks for having me, Paul.
So just to let our listeners know, being in the multifamily industry myself, I read different publications, articles, newsletters, email newsletters, and I came across an article that you wrote in, Multifamily Housing News?
I think it's Multi-Housing News.
Multi-Housing News. And it was the topic of our show, the 8 Game Changers for Multifamily. And I read the article, and it linked to some other areas of some of the things that were discussed. And I found it fascinating. And we've touched on the changes that happen in our industry on other episodes in the past, but never as in-depth as your article did. So I invited you on the show because I want you, from your view, being on a national basis, to with that 40,000-foot view, to talk a little bit about these 8 game changers and also other things in the industry that you see that are coming so that our listeners who are in the industry will understand that. So jumping right into the article, you have it broken down into marketplace, people, employment, transportation, shopping, health, and spaces. And let's delve into a couple of those in this segment. For instance, marketplace. Tell us a little bit about what your findings are on that.
Sure. So, we commissioned some research. We have a whole series of research reports. One was with Hoyt Advisory Services. One of their big findings was that we will need 4.6 million new apartments over, I guess, between here and 2030. That got us thinking, started this whole process of wondering what those apartments of the future would look like and whether what we're building would really meet some of these changing demands from our customers and some of these big trends taking place in the market. One we viewed as marketplace, which I think most people understand that sort of expectations of the customer have changed over the last few years. They have full access to information, completely unfiltered, and this, ratings and reviews. A lot of our NMHC members put a lot of effort into this, more so than they did just several years ago. Their lives today are hectic. They're looking for anything they can do to make their lives more convenient, looking for immediacy, personalization, consistency, and anticipation is sort of how we break it out. So basically, this gets to changing expectations of consumers. They want things immediately. If you don't have systems that are 24/7 and that allow them to do this, they kind of are taken aback. It's sort of what they expect, and that's sort of the one piece for the marketplace trend.
Well, we touched in some past episodes on changes as far as the immediate access, unfiltered access, as you put it. And touched on reputation management and how big of a change that has been since just 10 years ago when a lot of these platforms weren't even available as far as social media and so forth. What have you seen specifically in that area as far as the changes and what people in the industry are doing about it?
Yeah, I think that's a huge change. I think they've finally gotten their hands around it. It's taken a while. I think when it first came out, it was this real question is, what do we do about this? One of the issues is there are numerous platforms where people are making ratings and reviews. Our members are figuring it out. They are aggregating this data. They are getting new positions, reputation managers. A lot are hiring people with that specific title to monitor the ratings and reviews and respond. We did some research with the Kingsley Associates, and we asked a specific question. I don't have that data directly in front of me, but it was, do you expect to see a response to a negative review? And, of course, the majority said they did. But what was surprising to us is that a good number of them expected to see a response even to a positive review, like a thank you, for recognizing that our maintenance team, did such a great job. So huge issue, I think, and there's a lot of startups out there that are working on aggregating this data to help you understand and keep track and sort of notify the right people when a negative review comes through, and a lot of work being put into a prompt, fast response and sort of correction to any sort of issues that come up. But it's been, I would say, it's a significant disruption that's taken place over the last, 10 years?
Oh, yeah.
Five years?
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like it, almost every month there's some new platform out there or something that someone hadn't seen coming, and all of a sudden people seem to be scrambling to try and figure out how to deal with it. And we have had some guests on the show that have someone inside their own company that handles the reputation management and responding. And then there's other larger companies that seem to hire third-party companies to do that for them, and they get the ability to approve the response before it goes out. But I guess they have so many properties and so many different other things they're working on that it's hard for them to concentrate on that themselves.
Yeah, it really is. When you think about it, there are Google reviews, there are reviews on your site, there's reviews on Yelp. I mean, they're just have really proliferated and are used. I mean, think about your own decision-making process when you're purchasing something or looking to take a vacation. People are reading reviews. I would just anecdotally say 75% of the population, factors it into most of their buying decisions.
Yeah, and one of our guests, when we were talking about this, even said that there's no way to calculate how much potential business you lose because people never actually come to the property to look at it because they've already seen something online that's turned them away.
Right. How do you account for those for the lease that you didn't get?
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, another thing in your article, we've got about 3 minutes left before we're going to take a break. But one of the other things in your article was people. Let's talk a little bit about the people that you see that's changing the way we think about things.
Sure, and with 3 minutes, I'll try to keep it fast. But the basic one of the major findings, and we were looking forward 12 years, and where the population is going to be. We've had a pretty easy focus over the last 12 years or so because you had the millennials, and they were a distinct group with distinct needs. We see it getting a lot more complicated moving forward. The population is getting older. We see in 2030, two-thirds of the population of the renter population is going to be over the age of 35. So you've got an older population. I think you've seen this trend where people are getting married later. The median age of first marriage for men now is 29.5 years,
wow,
which is kind of like amazing. And that data, that's probably a year or two old. So I would say, the median age is 30, which is just incredible. And that's a significant rise. Having kids later, the median age is 26.3. Household types, I think everyone in the industry knows this change. 44% in 1960 were married with children. Today, that number is less than 19%. So that means over 80% of the population is something other of households, is something other than married with children. Another major finding, we commissioned the Hoyt Research, showed us that in about 5 years, and this gets back to that data that we just talked about people having kids later and getting married later, population growth through immigration, it will surpass population growth by natural births in about 5 years, and then we'll continue to grow. That gap will continue to grow up to 2030. So you're looking at more population from immigrant households. Even with all the conversations that we're having today about immigration, we still anticipate immigrant households to make up more, a larger percentage of the population growth. And the data also shows, which is anecdotally, I think people know, immigrant households are larger and they're more likely to rent. So you've got a lot of different factors going on here, and it's going to be a lot more complicated than, you know, building a one-bedroom apartment for a millennial in the city.
Yeah, and I guess some of that might, as far as the immigration aspect, might have certain pockets of the country that it, that affects more than others.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are some parts of the country where you wouldn't have population growth in the state if it weren't for immigration. And specific, you know, groups are attracted to specific areas. And I know in the Midwest, there's pockets of, you know, specific immigrant groups that our members are, you know, are renting to and having to figure out how that translates into the types of units that they should be providing, which I think is going to be the big question moving forward. And our take on it is that as much flexibility as you can work in, the better. And we are anticipating potentially some advances in construction that might allow flexibility in those unit types. So as you sort of, as your market moves from millennials into this more complicated, older market, more immigrants, the product is going to have to shift.
Okay, great. Well, we need to take a break right now, but we will be back after these messages. You are listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen and Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220. Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
We're back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and today we are discussing eight game changers for multifamily. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today on the Multifamily Matters Hotline is Rick Hoey, Vice President and of Industry and Technology Initiatives with the National Multifamily Housing Council. Before we get back into the discussion, I just want to remind our listeners that if you would like to provide show topics or guest ideas or suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at www.multifamilyradio.com. So, Rick, in the first segment, we talked about the marketplace and the people, which are disruptive and it is changing the way we operate in multifamily. I want to talk this segment about employment and transportation, which was cited in your article as two major areas that people need to be aware of. Let's start out with employment.
Sure. We're seeing big shifts in this area. I think the overall message is that it's evolving and that the traditional 9-to-5 work in a downtown office is becoming less and less the norm. We're seeing the line between home and office is getting blurred. 43%, this is a Gallup poll, I think, 43% of people responded say that they telework to some extent I think it was like a third of those said that they would change jobs if given the opportunity to telework at least some of the time. So that's one trend. So you see, and that gets to our industry in that, you know, if you're working from home, you're going to need that broadband internet. Excuse me. You're going to need some space potentially to meet with potential clients on site. So I think the whole concept of what an apartment is going to change. Another piece here, if you look at the data, people are working later. In 1996, which isn't that long ago, a quarter of the population was still working after the age of 65. Today, that's a third. So you've got people working later in life, and some of that might just be, you know, a little bit of consulting work, which gets to the next stat, which is there was a 50% jump in the last couple of years in alternative work. So this gets to the gig economy, it gets to freelancing, it gets to temporary work, and that might relate to that last stat with some of the people 65 and older doing a semi-retirement where they still want a little bit of income, but they don't want to, you know, work full-time. All of this, you know, really has a lot of implications for the apartments that we're going to be building in the future. I think you're going to see more and more less of a reason to have to get up every morning and go into that office and deal with that commute 9 to 5. A lot more people are going to be working from home and using some of the amenities that we're providing.
And I think also it would stand to reason, correct me if I'm wrong, but the more people are working at home, it would affect the property's potential expense with they're going to be using more water, they're going to be using more power. So any percentage that the apartment the property pays for those things could increase, and that would be something that could affect the NOI of the property.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you know, potentially you're seeing this rise of sort of co-working space. So you've got the people who are home all day, as you said, they're using a lot of the amenities and the facilities. You've got this trend of co-working, and this sort of gets to this whole blending of sort of work and home. We're seeing banks who don't get a lot of traffic turning that space into co-working space. We're seeing restaurants that only serve dinner turning into co-working space. It could be that there's potential, you know, revenue in apartments through co-working space if, you know, they feel like they have adequate facilities there for both the residents and sort of potential, you know, outside of the community people who are looking to use the co-working space, which might offset some of these higher expenses from the fact that people are now not leaving their apartment at 9 o'clock in the morning. They're staying there and they're using electricity and they're going out in the lobby and using your Wi-Fi. So lots of changes, lots of sort of blurring of sort of traditional patterns of work and home.
Yeah, I certainly can see that. And then transportation was one of the points that that you were talking about as far as disruptive and new changes coming.
Yeah, and this one is really, it's tricky because, you know, as I said, we have this Kingsley Resident Preferences Survey, and we ask residents what they're interested or very interested in, and 88% list parking as being sort of a very important feature. So it really, in this area, there's a couple things going on. You've got the lifestyle trends, and I think there's a major significant sort of break there between urban and suburban. So it really depends upon your product on the lifestyle piece. The second piece is we're looking at millions, if not billions of dollars being invested in new technology around automated vehicles. As hard as it is to believe that that's going to happen with the kind of money going into it, it's likely to happen. So you've got, you know, these lifestyle trends with the millennials, you know, getting their driver's licenses later, emergence of ride sharing and ride hailing taking place. You've got this new economy where people are having everything delivered to their house. All of this has significant implications for the apartment community in terms of their parking lot, but also in terms of Uber waiting stations potentially in urban areas, how you're going to get all these, you know, if everyone's getting their foods with these food preparation facilities, they're getting their dry cleaning, they're getting all types of things delivered. It creates a huge issue for, you know, just delivery and how you facilitate all of this in the community. And there could be the potential that you don't need some of this parking in some of these properties. So there, a lot of our members are building in flexibility in that space that they can convert that to storage space or to, you know, maybe future residences at some point.
Yeah, and I know there are companies out there in the industry who will work on behalf of the owner to try and lease out those spaces if they're in the proper areas to people who are not residents of the community. If it's in an area where there's shopping or office, try and monetize those spaces, because maybe they either overbuilt their parking or they like you said, the changes are coming and they don't need as much parking. Have you seen any of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, if you think about what the startup economy, you know, has been doing, it's trying to really completely utilize whatever is not being 100% utilized. So, you know, as I said at the start, the reality of this is parking is still really in demand. And, you know, even going back to our work, even though work's evolving, people are still leaving at 9 o'clock to go. So you do have a parking lot with availability during the day in most cases at this time. We're looking at, you know, at what I just discussed as trends for the next dozen years or so. So, yeah, there are startups that are, working with apartment communities to utilize that space. And for folks who are maybe, you know, shopping in a nearby retail, that you can use that space for parking and receive a little bit of revenue through that process. But there's, you know, there's at least a couple of them out there. I think we cite a few in our disruption report. But, sort of how do you fully utilize all of your investment? Because when you think about it, the investment that apartment builders are putting into parking, it's significant. Is it like $30,000 a parking space
right,
or something like that?
Right. Well, again, we've got about 3 minutes left, and I wanted to shift to another thing in your article that was disruptive, and that was shopping. Let's see if we can cover that in 3 minutes.
Okay. I'm sure the property managers would have a lot longer time for that with all the packages that they're receiving.
Right.
So what we're seeing here, and I think this isn't really news either, but you know, people are still buying stuff. They're just not driving to the mall to buy it or to the retail center. Amazon in 2016 had $89 billion in sales, which is just amazing. So all of this, you know, leads to significant packages coming into our communities. Developers and managers are putting in package lockers. Amazon has its own package locker. There's a whole host of major retailers that have been around for decades that are now in serious trouble. You look at what's actually doing well. Restaurants and bars actually are doing quite well. And we're also seeing sort of this move to pop-up retail, people looking for experiences rather than transactions. And I think that's an interesting concept, because the situation we have now, you know, is traditionally if you have retail in a mixed-use building, you need a long-term lease. This flies in the face of that, where you have potentially people who come in for a month and run a restaurant, and then you have maybe it shifts into, you know, a clothing store and then maybe a farmer's market for another month. So it's going to take some getting used to, I think, in the retail market, but we are seeing all the major REIT players looking at this, and, Simon and all the other folks are trying to figure out how to deal with it. So it's another disruptive trend, in addition to the fact that, you know, we're getting thousands of packages delivered to our communities every day, and I don't think they've quite figured it all out, but I think that there's a lot of solutions out there, and they're trying a lot of them, and they'll have a solution soon.
Yeah, and just briefly, I want to ask you a question about something you said. So when you're talking about pop-up shopping or pop-up restaurants and so forth, you're seeing there is a trend possibly going towards a multifamily property having this space, and they bring in different people to utilize that space, whether it be a restaurant 1 month or a store the next month.
Yeah, and I think so many of our communities, they, you know, the communities are making them put in retail that generally they can't lease out. Mm-hmm. So if you've got this vacant space, at least if it makes any money, in some cases they're happy because it sits vacant for so long. So it's a possibility, and I don't have any anecdotal stories of folks that are doing it, but it's definitely a trend.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, we're going to take a break. And right now, I just want to remind everybody that they can go to our website at www.multifamilyradio.com and learn more about the show. And if you would like to provide us some suggestions of topics and guests, please do so. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220. Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
We are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters. We're discussing eight game changers for multifamily. I'm Paul Marks, and we're talking with Rich Hoey, Vice President of Industry and Technology Initiatives with the National Multifamily Housing Council. I want to take a moment to thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. E-Conserve, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S., WaterLogic, the smarter way to water, providing professional irrigation water management, and Ted W. Allen & Associates, specializing in multifamily habitational insurance since 1967. Also, I want to let our listeners know that there's all kinds of ways you can listen to our show. You can listen, obviously, on the radio live. You can also listen live on Fridays at 10 a.m., on the KTEK website, which is www.business1110ktek.com. You can listen live at 10 a.m. On the iHeartRadio app or on the Business 1110 KTEK app. Or you can always go to our website, www.multifamilyradio.com, and listen to any archived radio show. Rick, we covered employment, transportation, and shopping, which were stated in your article. I wanted to jump into the health and wellness as far as what is disruptive and changing from your reports and your studies. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, I think we all know fitness center always rates well in terms of, you know, what people look for an amenity, whether they actually use it. I think that's just, I think people know how much they use the gym, so it is pretty, it's something they want to be there, but they don't maybe necessarily use. But I think we're seeing a couple of trends, and they're kind of interesting because they maybe are, you know, counteract each other somewhat. People are starting to look more holistically at health in terms of sort of health and wellness. But one trend in there, you know, they've got a whole industry on health tracking, so I think the basic, you know, treadmill that we used to, you know, make sure that we had just really is not going to cut it moving forward. I think you've seen a lot more interactive technology. People are tracking. They want everything to sync up. They're, you know, taking maybe a class, and on the screen is, you know, other people taking the class in New York. So you see this, you know, so you see that trend. And I think we're anticipating almost on the other side of that a reaction to all of this technology. 65% of people support what they call a digital detox, just to kind of get away from the technology. I think there's a sense that the technology has taken a toll on our, our mental health somewhat, which I think we can all relate to. And only 21% of those 65 people who want to take the digital detox actually do, and I think we can all relate to that as well because we just never seem to be able to turn it off. So I think there's this whole movement towards wellness. a whole lot of emphasis on sleep. There's a whole industry out there today that wasn't there years ago in terms of looking at snoring, looking at a whole new series of mattresses. I mean, there's just a lot there, and a lot of this, you know, ties back to our apartments as well. You know, maybe it's not just the fitness center anymore. Maybe it's a meditation room, as you're seeing, you know, people getting more interested in meditation. And if you think of, you know, think of where yoga is today. This is a pretty good example, I think. And where it was 5 to 10 years ago, I'd say it was, you know, maybe considered fringe. It's definitely mainstream today. Our take is that more than likely meditation will be as mainstream as yoga is, you know, in the coming years. You know, this goes out broader to organic food and sort of the natural light that you get into a unit. People are looking at this type of stuff. And they're looking, you know, even beyond that, at the company that's renting the unit to them and asking, you know, about their corporate social responsibility. Are they the type of company that they want to support?
And when it comes to these new trends and ideas, are you seeing acceptance across the country and from the properties or the owners of the properties?
I think we are seeing. I mean, we've heard, you know, anecdotally about Zen floors where the whole floor is dedicated to, you know, being a quiet. It's like the quiet car in a train, where they're renting to people who are specifically looking for that type of thing. I think it's in its infancy, but I think we are seeing sort of either meditation areas or quiet just spaces for people to go. I think there are a lot of farmers markets that are being integrated into communities, which gets to sort of people wanting local and organic food, and people kind of maybe rethinking the whole, you know, traditional fitness center and what it's all about. I think still, this is a trend of the next dozen years or so, and I'd say it's kind of, just beginning. I think a lot of this is market dependent. Certain markets, there's going to be a lot more emphasis on this than others. But lots of interesting stuff going on there to monitor, and I think the fitness center that we see today is going to look a lot different in the coming years as people's expectations and needs change.
And what's interesting is I was visiting a property, last year, and it was on a Saturday morning, and they were taking everything down. I'd gotten there after the event, but there was some type of a company that evidently holds spin classes, and so they would bring in, and they had stacked up to be put back into some vehicle that they were going to take away, all these spin bicycles that they brought into the property. Obviously, you know, if you have a big crowd, your fitness center may not have enough of the devices for people to use. So they're bringing these things in, which seemed like a pretty, it's not just bringing in some mats and, you know, for yoga, you're bringing in a lot of equipment to do something like that. But are you seeing things like that happen?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, that really ties back to what we were talking about in the retail, because people are looking more for experiences, and that's like, you know, probably a good example of sort of pop-up retail to a certain extent. You know, it comes and then it's gone, and I think that the existing community residents really appreciate that, and it creates an event and something that sort of creates some buzz around the community. And yeah, I think we are seeing that. We're seeing a lot more of that going on, and that could be, you know, morning yoga classes as well that come in, that, you know, an instructor comes in from outside of the community and sets up a space, and maybe even outdoors for yoga classes. And I think that's getting to sort of that direction that I'm talking about in terms of sort of much broader, much more flexibility in terms of what you're providing. Probably less tied so much to just that traditional sort of fitness center.
Are you finding that the properties, as far as the health and wellness, is it something that is more vibrant in the urban type properties as opposed to the suburban, or is there a distinction?
Probably seeing more of just about everything in the urban properties, because
right.
the In most markets, that's almost, you know, that's a lot of Class A properties just because of the cost to construct it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you do have a lot of suburban markets that are, and you have a lot of these sort of urbanish suburban markets where you're seeing this, you know, and, you know, as you said, there's an expense to that. So
sure.
it does require, a certain amount of revenue coming out of the property. So, I mean, just anecdotally, I'd say probably that would be the case for probably your Class A urban properties would have more of that. But as with any trend, you know, what starts at being really expensive, costs come down and generally spreads out to all communities. I mean, if you think about the kitchens in apartments today would be considered incredibly luxurious compared with like just 5 to 10 years ago, you know,
right.
And that's standard. It's standard now.
Right.
You know?
And, yeah. Even and no matter where the apartment is located, it's a standard thing to have upgrades in the kitchens and so forth. And are you finding that a lot of that these changes that people are, because we're talking about developing new properties and how you would build it, but what about retrofitting in older properties to do some of these things? Obviously, they may not have the space to do pop-up things, but as far as the other items that obviously they've got to be able to adapt to.
Right, and that's, that's a significant part of the market, the sort of the whole value-add properties. It is more difficult, but it, you know, it can be done, and you know, and you think about it, with the new properties, you're talking about such a lead time that we are, you know, if you're drawing one up on the books today, you're not going to have residents in there until 2020, maybe
right.
2021, depending upon the entitlement process. I mean, the entitlement process can be really slow. So in a sense, you're building the apartment of the future today. I mean, you're at least the ones on the books are the apartment of the future. Probably a little bit quicker turnaround with a retrofit. But probably a little bit more complicated too, because of the constraints that you're going to have. A lot of activity definitely in sort of the retrofit market, and I don't know how much of this is going on in those. But that's a good point.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely a lot of thought about this on the new side, but they should really be thinking about it on the retrofit side too.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to take another break. We are going to be back with our final segment of Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we're back, and we are going into our final segment of Multifamily Matters. Today, we're discussing 8 game changers for multifamily. I'm Paul Marks. My guest is Rick Hoey, Vice President of Industry Technology Initiatives with the National Multifamily Housing Council. And actually, I think that we had 9 game changers, because when we were in a break, you were talking about the fact that technology is kind of intertwined throughout all the different topics that we've discussed. Let's talk a little bit about technology, because that is so important in today's world.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, everything we've talked about is touched by technology. It's like, you know, the fact that people are working from home is because they can work from home. They can forward their phone, and they have a VPN, and they can do all that. You're not tied to the space. And all these packages that are coming in are related to the fact that you can do all your shopping all these days. So, yeah, definitely a thread that goes through them all. And looking at a couple of major trends that will impact our industry, you know, we talk a lot about this at our annual Operations and Technology conference called OpTech. So looking at smart home technology, and there's really two pieces to this. There's the consumer-facing stuff, which is your Alexa and your electronic door latches and your Nest thermostats. But secondarily, there is sort of overall property management smart home, which is developing at the same time. So both of those trends, I think a lot of folks in the industry looking into this, probably just putting their toes in the water on some of it. But I think the thinking is there's marketing advantages for the consumer-facing stuff, and there's operational efficiency advantages for sort of the overall property. And the overall property, you could be talking about detecting leaks, sort of monitoring energy usage, monitoring sort of the state of equipment, because a lot of equipment gives off signs when it's getting ready to break, and you can catch it before it creates a disruption. And with that leak detection, I would say, like, what does a leak cost? It's about $100,000 once it starts and starts taking out, floor after floor because water runs downhill.
Sure.
So I think that's one trend. I can look at a couple others, as part, and actually relates to this, because as you start thinking about this, it's generating all types of data. Even the consumer, you know how many times the door is open, you know the temperatures in the different rooms. So there's just a huge amount of data. I think people really don't know at this point what to do with it all and sort of how to convert it into business intelligence, but they're figuring it out. And that kind of leads to another major trend, which is sort of artificial intelligence. So with this much data, you've got artificial intelligence, machine learning, that could potentially take all that data and make sense of it for you, both in terms of the smart home, but also in terms of sort of when you look at marketing. You get so much data with marketing. As to, you know, now with marketing automation, you're tracking what people are doing and where they're going. Artificial intelligence can help you sort through all that and manage the different leads. So that's just a couple of trends in technology.
How far off do you think they are with being able to do something with all this data through either artificial intelligence or otherwise? Are we talking about within the next 10 years?
Oh, I would say sure. I mean, there's millions of dollars going into this. What's the stat that I saw? $126 billion being invested in by 2025 in artificial intelligence. So yeah, I think the technology's there. It's really now a question as to, you know, how do you make it work right? Because, you know, it still has gaps. It still can't do some things that the human mind can do. But when you think about the exponential sort of learning curve of technology, I don't think it's going to be that long. How it plays out, I don't think we really know yet. My guess would be that sort of with artificial intelligence, that marketing is the first place, looking at chatbots and pricing potentially, mm-hmm. and sort of, you know, as I said, figuring out what to do with all this data, be able to say, hey, here are some trends from the data that you couldn't do yourself. It's just an amazing explosion of data that we're currently seeing, but that it's kind of nothing compared with what we're going to get once the Internet of Things sort of fully expands and provides us data on just everything. Every physical object will potentially have an RFID, a radio frequency ID tag on it, and could be sending you back information. So it's almost too much. So
right.
That's where I kind of think AI could work in there and sort of take it all in, sort it out, and spit back some actual usable business intelligence to you.
And do you see it eventually being on a property-by-property basis? In other words, the people on-site at the property would have access and use it? Or is it something that you see more of an umbrella in more of a corporate environment for the companies to filter down to their on-site people?
Yeah, I mean, traditionally with new technologies like this, the path is doing a pilot and seeing how it goes before you do sort of portfolio-wide. Mm-hmm. And I think that would definitely be the case here. And then even then, you know, maybe not portfolio-wide. It might just be certain properties. You know, we've talked a lot about the distinctions between the different properties. Some may get more value out of whatever artificial intelligence, you know, ends up doing. I mean, it could lead to self-guided tours in communities, completely, you know, different way that the apartments are actually run. We just, you know, it's just hard to guess, especially with a technology like this that's so has so much potential. It's kind of like asking, well, what's going to be the impact of the internet back before the internet? It's, mm-hmm. You know, you could guess, but who knew it would get us to sort of where we are today?
Yeah, it's hard to guess because I think nobody would imagine we can do some of the things today. Right. You know, 10, 15 years ago, no one thought they would have in their top pocket basically a computer that could you know, give them instant access to any kind of fact or data that they need to get to.
Right.
So it's amazing how things have advanced. Well, look, I enjoyed your article and certainly enjoyed delving into the details of it here. But let's talk a little bit about if somebody wants to know more about this. I know you had mentioned to me during the break that there are links that people can go to for videos and so forth about disruption. And specifically, why are we calling this disruption? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, I think the term probably gets a little overused, but we kind of wanted to shake things up a little bit because as we started looking forward, we realized, hey, a lot of these trends will have direct connection to the physical environment and what's being built. So, I mean, the concept generally starts with disruptive innovation is where it came from, and we've shortened it to disruption. I can tell you a little bit, if you want to go out on site to get more information on this, this is just sort of the tip of the iceberg here. We started this process. We went out and spoke with, you know, we didn't really have this, completely grew organically. We got that information that 4.6 million apartments would be needed. We started thinking internally, what does that mean? We went and talked to some partners and some members, KTGY, which is an architecture firm, and they have offices here in Tyson's Corner. We're in Washington, D.C. Began a discussion with them, and it eventually led to this report, and it led to a bunch of videos that we have out online, which you can go take a look at. That's at nmhc.org/disruption. And the report can be downloaded there as well. So you can take a look at that. And we have a whole host of other research out there. The Hoyt research is out at weareapartments.org. So you can go and get estimates as to how many apartments will be needed in your community over the next 12 years.
Wow, I think it's all great information. I would encourage our listeners to go to those spaces. Tell us a little bit about the National Multifamily Housing Council and what it does and how it helps the industry.
Sure. So National Multifamily Housing Council, we're located here in Washington, D.C. We do federal advocacy for the apartment industry. But in addition to that, we provide resources. We do a lot of research. The concept of sort of keeping the industry abreast on all the topics that they should be concerned about, and in this case, sort of stuff coming down the road that they should start thinking about as they put together their strategies moving forward. We host 7 different events every year. We have our annual meeting, which is one of the largest confabs for the industry, and that happens every year in January. You know, as I said, we have the Operations and Technology Conference. Some additional research, which you can find online, of course, the Kingsley Report, that is a for-sale report, but that's the NMHC Kingsley Resident Preferences Report, and that reports back over 250,000 residents responded. We conducted, just to test some of these ideas, a focus group, and that's the 2018 Consumer Housing Insights Survey, which we did with Beck Research. That's a general idea as to what we do, but we're busy all the time, and it's a great time for the industry with sort of years and years of sort of being, everyone's saying we're in the ninth inning, but we've been in the longest ninth inning in history because things have been going well for as long as I've been here, which is 5 years.
Wow. How long has the council been in existence?
We're celebrating our 40th anniversary this year.
Wow.
It's an exciting time, and ironically, I think we were started out of concern for rent control, and 40 years later, we're sort of back in the midst with that, with a lot of the efforts that are going on in California to bring it back. Kind of gone full circle.
Yeah, and how is the council funded?
So we have, our membership is, it's a member-funded organization, and our members are, large and mid-sized apartment companies. Most of the public companies are members and are very active in sort of managing the council. And we have a lot of great sponsors who sponsor our events every year. That's it. We have 1,000 company members, and I'm not sure the full number of actual members. It's over 12,000. I'm not sure of the actual the numbers there. Sorry.
No problem. It's a great organization, and I guess when you do advocacy, you're also in doing some lobbying since you're located in Washington D.C. with the folks in the political world there.
That's right. We're very deep. We're deep in it. We just are catching our breath after the whole tax reform mm-hmm. initiative. We have a vice president of tax who was up there every day working sun up to sundown, making sure. I mean, a lot of what we do is more making sure that we're not damaged
right.
by whatever comes down the pike and that they don't repeat what they did with the last tax reform, which was really horrible for the industry. And we feel like for the most part that we protected the industry and represented their interest well in the last process. But yeah, just across the board, we've got a whole host of lobbyists. We're bipartisan, Democrat and Republican. We have one interest, and that's the interest of the apartment industry, and that's not a partisan issue. Mm-hmm. We've got a dozen or so staff that spend most of their days on the halls of Congress representing the multifamily industry.
Well, great, right. Well, I want to thank my guest today, Rick Hoey, with the National Multifamily Housing Council. Fascinating information. We're going to be back next week, next Friday at 10 a.m. and each and every Friday with another great topic and some great guests. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.